Welcome to this edition of Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your guest host for this episode, Dr. Doug Ray from Baltimore, Maryland. And today I'm joined by Dr. Matthew Geltzeiler. Matt is an associate professor of otolaryngology, and he's also the director of the Sinonasal Oncology and Skull-Based Surgery Center at the Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon. And today we're going to be talking about his recent publication, Rate of Dupilumab Use and Symptom Severity of Patients with Chronic Sinusitis with Nasal Polyps After Draft 3 Frontal Sinusotomy. So Matt, thanks for joining me. Have you seen the sun in the last couple of months?
You know, thanks so much, Doug. It's a pleasure to see you today. In Oregon, right now, we are experiencing what we call a January, which is when it's been nothing but sunny skies for part of the month of January. So we're taking advantage of it.
You know, I was a resident at OHSU, as you know, and we had beautiful summers, but I'll tell you that the last winter I was there, my chief year, my windshield wipers on my car were on for three straight months, and I didn't turn them off. I just turned the car off, turned the car on, and the windshield wipers would go, and I needed them for three straight months.
Yeah, that is fairly typical here. But you know what? It gives us snow in the mountains, and so then we get to go skiing. So that's always fun.
Yeah, and you guys have perfect summers. So we're gonna get going. I'm gonna give a little bit of background, and then we're just gonna let you run with it and tell us all about this great paper that you just published. So the surgical treatment of chronic sinusitis with nasal polyps, it requires a real careful effort and focus on the ethmoid frontal sinuses. I've always thought that, because this is where, especially in revisions, where the polyps tend to redevelop. And it's also where the polyps cause the most problem, right? Because they block the olfactory cleft, they block the frontal sinuses, they cause sinuses not to drain. And so revision surgery needs a careful attention to these areas. And over time, the last 5 or 6 years, there's been sort of a effort by people like you and me that do a lot of revision surgery to be more aggressive about performing a modified low throat procedure, or a draft three procedure in these patients, because it sort of opens up these areas. It opens up the olfactory cleft, it opens up the frontal sinuses and the ethmoids, and allows for better distribution of topical steroids, which is sort of the key post-treatment for these patients and sort of the maintenance treatment to prevent the polyps from growing back. But with that being said, there are now obviously biologic therapies that have become sort of key treatments for patients with refractory polyps in addition to surgery. And these medications obviously have some side effects, and not everybody tolerates them or can be on them long-term. And they're also very expensive, but they, much like surgery, can be very effective in improving patients' quality of life, especially patients with very severe, poorly controlled disease, even after surgery. So Matt, your paper looks at the rate of post-operative dupilumab in patients who have chronic sinusitis with nasal polyps after they've had a modified low throat surgery. So tell me a little bit about how you got interested in this topic.
Thanks so much, Doug. And just really quick, I just want to say thank you, not only to you, but to also the entire editorial team at IFAR. I also really want to thank my co-authors. Kevin G is one of our great residents who did awesome work on this, and my partners, Tim Smith and Kara Detwiller, Jess Mace, and Sham Joshi. But it was really a team effort from all of us to get this paper done. But to answer your question, Doug, I got interested in low throats because I'm a surgeon who likes doing low throats. Do I need to make that a disclosure as part of the as one of my disclosures? But most importantly, I mean, our patients, we have a long history here of doing lots of low throats, and we've noticed that our patients do very well after having them. We enjoy doing them. Our fellows like doing them, and the patients do well. And we kind of were noticing that very few of our patients who had underwent surgical optimization, who needed a revision and then got a low throat, actually went on to need a biologic. So we felt that it was important to go back and look at all of our data and make sure that we actually had a good sense of what our percentages of patients were. And so that kind of spawned us to take this project on.
That's great. And so talk a little bit about your paper's methodology.
We looked back over the past decade at patients who underwent a low throat for patients that had CRS with polyps. So all patients had chronic sinusitis with polyps. We then looked obviously at all their demographic data and, you know, various patient factors like they had asthma and AERD, et cetera. All the patients had previously undergone surgery. So everyone was a revision, but not necessarily surgery with us. So a lot of the patients had surgery in the community before coming to us. Our primary outcome after performing the Lothrup was how many patients ended up needing to eventually go on a biologic. And in this study, all the patients, the biologic that we use here almost exclusively for all the patients in this study was dupilumab. And then obvious secondary outcomes were improvement in SNOT-22 scores, et cetera.
Okay. And so your study spanned about a 10-year period of patients who underwent revision surgery and underwent Lothrup. And you identified in your paper about 87 patients that were nasal polyp patients who underwent a modified Lothrup. So talk a little bit about what you found in those patients.
Overall, in patients with CRS with polyps who underwent revision surgery with the Lothrup, we found that 15% of patients ended up needing to go on Dupixent. So that means 85% of patients did not. So we're being able to manage successfully just with surgery as well as topical therapy, and then some of them also with asthma desensitization. The SNOT-22s in the overall cohort were 47 preoperatively and then dropped down to 22 at about 2 years. So overall, our patients ended up doing extremely well with a modified Lothrup procedure. We looked at a subgroup of patients with AERD, because we know that those patients are slightly higher risk. And in that patient cohort, the rate of people going on to need dupilumab was 23%. So a little bit higher, but still pretty good in this high-risk population. Remember, everyone in this group, in that subgroup, has AERD and was also getting a revision. And so, and then the last kind of interesting finding is that we found that patients who presented for their revision surgery earlier, so their prior surgery was within 3 years as opposed to after, those patients were at a higher risk of going on to need a biologic afterwards. So early recurrence was a poor prognostic sign, which is similar to data that has been found by Valerie Lund by Claire Hopkins rather, and Valerie as well from the UK.
So Matt, were there any other risk factors or comorbid factors that were associated with needing to be on dupilumab after the surgery?
The two most salient variables were AERD and early recurrence.
Wasn't there like a higher rate of asthma and allergic rhinitis in those patients as well?
For sure. And I don't really know exactly asthma is kind of self-explanatory. The allergic rhinitis is a little bit more difficult to kind of understand why.
Right. But the shorter interval just kind of makes sense because these are probably patients with more severe disease, correct?
Yeah, exactly. You know, most of the studies from the UK don't look at Lothrup specifically, but they found that patients that recurred within 3 years had a higher risk of needing additional revisions. And so I just think it goes on to just be an underlying predictor of disease severity. I think about that a lot. If I've done a surgery on a patient and I did their primary surgery and their polyps are back and they're already coming and looking like they're going to need a revision and it's been within a year or so, like I worry a lot about those patients and their long-term ability to be controlled with surgery and topicals alone.
So Matt, you looked at the SNOT-22 scores and in all comers, they had a significant improvement in their SNOT-22 scores as you'd expect. Were you able to look at whether addition of postoperative dupilumab in those patients affected their SNOT-22 scores in the post-op group, so the post-surgical group that were started on dupilumab after their surgery? Did the dupilumab affect their SNOT-22 scores?
We didn't specifically look at their additional improvement because the study kind of ended, the endpoint was them going on the dupilumab. But I mean, we know that dupilumab works. And we know that, you know, patients can have a similar 20-point-ish improvement in their SNOT-22 scores when they go on it. Anecdotally, I have seen many, many patients do well on Dupixent who failed maximum surgery or who otherwise don't want additional surgery if they're not a surgical candidate for whatever reason. But as you mentioned in the intro, you know, it's potentially lifelong therapy. It's very expensive and they have to inject themselves, you know, forever. So we still think that surgery up front is the preferred modality if we can get good disease control in the patient population.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I would say that your patient population in this study was obviously patients with more severe disease, right? Refractory polyps, needed a revision Lothrup. And the number that you found of those patients is pretty low, 15% that actually needed to go on dupilumab. And you may not know the answer to this question. I did a little bit of research and other related articles, and I couldn't find this, but I'm going to ask you as sort of the expert here. Do you have any idea, all comers, patients with nasal polyps who need a revision surgery? And I'm not talking about just Lothrop. I'm talking about all comers need revision surgery. Are there any numbers out there that show how many of those patients or what percentage of them end up on dupilumab after surgery?
I'm not sure of what that number is overall, because there are so many patients who end up on dupilumab who necessarily shouldn't even be on it.
Right.
Or patients who should be on it and then don't end up getting it for insurance reasons or cost, or these types of things. You know, I think that we know that in patients with CRS with polyps, just straight up, about 80%+ of them will be controlled with surgery and topical therapy alone. And then, that's been shown in multiple studies, including a lot of work done by our colleagues in Australia. And then with revision surgery, especially with a Lothrop, you know, we only see another 15%-ish patients there who would then additionally need a biologic in that context. So if you kind of take it all the way back, you're like looking at 90-95% of patients with polyps whose disease should be controllable with surgery and topical therapy. Now, obviously, it's much more complicated than that. There's a lot of patients who have very severe asthma that need a biologic to help with control of that, even though their asthma can get better with surgery. And there's a lot of other subsets of diseases that cause polyps, like allergic fungal, et cetera. So it's not quite that, you know, straightforward. But yeah, sorry, I kind of rambled there. I hope I answered your question.
No, that's good. And the only reason why I was asking this is because it would be interesting if you could have that number to see if, like, all comers patients getting revision surgery but not getting Lothrops, how many of them need to go on dupilumab as compared to patients who get the Lothrop. So in other words, that would be a really strong, you have great results here, but it would be a really strong argument to say, okay, the Lothrop reduces the chance that they're going to need to be on dupilumab by this number, you know, and just an idea for paper or something, you know what I'm saying? So, because there's a lot of people out there doing revision surgery, but not doing Lothrop. How many of their patients go on dupilumab versus your patients who most of which get Lothrops?
Totally. But the other elephant in the room there, though, was like, what constitutes a good 2A, right? So my partner, Tim Smith, and I kind of have slightly different practice patterns here, because we wonder if the completeness of their 2A, depending on who did it and also how complicated their underlying frontal sinus anatomy is, they can have a very different diameter into their frontal sinus, an AP diameter, which could definitely affect the delivery of topical steroids. So a lot of times, like Tim, for instance, he wants to make sure everyone has a really good 2A first before they move on to a Lothrop. Whereas I have a little bit of a lower threshold to do a Lothrop up front, especially when patients are driving, because the geography of Oregon, sometimes people will be driving 3-4 hours to come and see us. So I have a little bit of a lower threshold to do one. And, you know, AP diameter has been something that's been studied by multiple groups. And we looked at it in our group here, in our study here, and we did not find that that was a variable of significance when seeing whether or not patients would eventually go on to need a biologic. But if you're looking at just a draft 2A alone, you know, so other groups have found that that's potentially a salient variable there.
Right. So I guess, yeah, it's obviously kind of fertile ground for additional studies to sort of answer these questions. And everybody's frontal sinus anatomy is different, right? So some people have really narrow frontals and you'll never feel good about the 2A, and the Lothrop is just what they need. And then some people have huge natural frontal recesses, right? The distance between cribriform and the orbit, they get a big wide opening with a 2A, and you feel pretty comfortable that you're going to be able to get topical steroids up into that area.
Totally.
So it's pretty clear in talking to you about sort of what your practice patterns is, because I was going to ask you about this, but you've kind of already answered it, which is that you'll start with a revision surgery, make sure that the frontal sinuses are wide open, whether it's a 2A or a Lothrop. And then if there's poor control long-term in their sinus symptoms and their asthma, then you're thinking about dupilumab. Would you say that's accurate?
Totally. The only thing that I would add is that if they have AERD, we do try to start patients within 4 to 6 weeks on asthma desensitization after they undergo any surgery, even if it's their first surgery and they're getting a 2A. We find that, and this is studied, this has been national as well, that about half of patients end up having to come off of their asthma desensitization for side effect reasons, usually like GI. Yeah, otherwise, we don't do upfront Lothrops. I know that I think some of our colleagues in Australia will do upfront Lothrops in polyp patients, but we do not. And that would certainly be, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this in a little bit, but it would be great to know upfront, like if we could better understand all of the variables that would make someone likely to fail and go on to need a bite, like it would be nice to know, like, who would potentially need that Lothrop upfront, because it would be worth putting in the time to just do it straight up, even though that'd be a long surgery.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great potential future study, right?
Definitely.
And I would just throw in there, because I'm not doing this type of research anymore, but also seeing if, I mean, I don't know if the data is out there, being able to just help surgeons that are out there decide for their revisions, do I need to do a Lothrop? Can I just get away with doing the frontal sinuses? And if a Lothrop reduces the chance that they're going to need to be on dupilumab, gives you more information to say, we should do a much more thorough surgery the second time around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now, the biggest thing that I use for that is how soon did they recur after they had a good 2A? So if they had a good 2A and they're sitting back in my office symptomatic with polyps everywhere within a year or two, those patients I'm pretty worried about. And I would definitely counsel them that even if I do a Lothrop, they're probably going to still end up being on a biologic. So those are patients who, you know, since this study has come out, as well as others, that I would potentially even consider putting on a biologic without doing a Lothrop. But in the vast majority of patients, they don't tend to recur that early. And so, yeah, I mean, regarding future studies, I think, you know, if we can really get a larger or a better understanding of endotyping patients, it would be incredible if we could be able to take a sample from someone's sinuses, send that mucus off to the lab, do a better job endotyping between type 2 versus non-type 2, or, you know, mixed endotype. Like if we could really hone that in to know that this particular individual is going to definitely need a biologic, this individual should get an upfront Lothrop, this individual, you know, we should just do the standard, start with a full fest with a 2A and see how they do. And so hopefully over time, we can get that type of personalized medicine with granularity.
Right. I mean, because it would provide you with a lot of data to help you go forward, because right now it sounds like based on your practice and the results of these studies, at this point, you're just using time to recurrence as the main driver. And there's probably so many other variables that you could be looking at.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's more complex. So it's not just time to recurrence, but in CRS with polyps, their overall SNOT 22, like what their endoscopy scores are, how bad is their asthma, these types of things are all certainly variables that will help us like govern our decision-making as well. But yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of room for additional research here, as well as choosing between the different biologics. Actually, Tim is hopefully going to get a new project off the ground here pretty soon to help study the differential efficacy of all the different biologics, which is pretty cool.
That's great. Well, you guys are doing some great work out there, Matt. Now, I know as a fact that your neurosurgeon is working right now in the OR on one of your patients. So I'm going to ask you if there's anything else you'd like to talk about, and then I'm going to let you go back to work out there.
Thank you for that. Nope. I think we covered this topic very well. I really appreciate you taking the time. And
it's a great paper, Matt. It really, I think it gives us some insight as to how we should be managing these patients, but more importantly, I think it brings up some other really good questions that you've talked about on this podcast that should be looked at through future research endeavors.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's also always nice as a surgeon when you find something that shows that your surgery actually helps patients. So we were pleased. We kind of knew that our patients did well when we did Lothrops on them. And we've had that experience for a long time. And so it's just nice to kind of show that in the data. And then hopefully, as you say, we'll not only drive further research, but it can also help us have discussions with our patients and kind of counsel them about what they can expect in terms of how likely they are to need additional stuff.
Well, thanks so much, Matt, for taking the time to sit down and chat with me on a cold Wednesday evening. And thanks so much. And I congratulate you and your authors on a great paper that gives us a lot of insights and brings up a lot of additional questions. So great work, Matt.
Thank you so much.
So I'm going to wrap up by thanking our Scope It Out listeners. This is Doug Ray for Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology, signing off for now. Take care.